Now, this main argument uses the second premise, and that is that math can't be coincidental. Because now the naturalist will say, well, yes, it can be coincidental. And then the theist will respond, well, it can't be coincidental because math can create things that the physical universe cannot manifest.
If you can't see my face, listeners, I'm very confused by that statement. So I'm going to have Pastor Doug explain that a little bit further. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Salty Pastor Podcast, a podcast dedicated to helping you grow in your faith, because in this day and age, you need to be mentally strong and know what you believe and why you believe it. And one of the best ways to do that is to learn how to think for yourself and the ways you think, because that will impact how you make your conclusion. My name is Jesse Mayer. I'll be your host, but we cannot do this without the one, the only, the Salty Pastor himself, Dr. Douglas Peake.
Hey, everyone. So good to be with you today in the Salty Crew. We've been really digging into some heady topics lately. We've been really pushing the limits of intellectual conceptualization. But I've been learning some new things. I've been pushing the limits. I hope you are too. And this has been really, really good, I think, for us. And one of the goals of the Salty Pastor is to let us know that, the more we know, the more we can grow. And ultimately, fluff is not enough. And it's not a matter of just getting more information. This isn't an issue of more information. This is an issue of considering different perspectives, whole frameworks of knowledge. And what that does is that really helps you then navigate future intellectual challenges in your life. So that's what these proofs are all about. And so, I'm trying to explain them. They might resonate with you, maybe not. That's fine. But I would encourage you to just take the very simple forms of these proofs and then just kind of think about them. They're very, they're not complicated when you just kind of lay them out. My hope is at the end of this entire series, we can put them all on a card for you or something, and you can just think on them. Because I think what you'll see is over time, it's like going to a gym and lifting weights. The more you do it, then the stronger everything else gets around the muscle. The tendons get stronger. The bones get stronger. The joints get stronger. The ligaments get stronger, And so not only does your muscle grow, but everything else around it grows strong as well. And that's what these proofs do, is they help you grow stronger in every sense of what it means to be a person, right? Just not mentally, but emotionally and intellectually and spiritually, and all these other different areas of your life. So take these proofs, just kind of meditate on them and think about the profound impact that they have. And so without that, I in regards to that, I guess it'd be a better way to say it is help us grow the channel. One of the things I've noticed is that our YouTube views have been going through the roof. That's mostly because there's a lot of atheists who are watching. Thank you, atheists, for watching. Thank you for tuning in. I actually enjoy that. And so I'm really happy that you're listening. But if you go there to our YouTube channel, like and subscribe, because the more subscriptions we get, then the better it is for our attempt at trying to get more people to be exposed to these things. And in the end, I just want you to know that your faith is something that is not only reasonable, but it's completely rational. Even though other people rationally come to different conclusions, they can't say that your faith is irrational at all. And that's very important to know in this day and age.
Yeah, I think especially nowadays, it's really easy to find a lot of churches that just want to work your emotional muscle, correct, right? Like, want you to come to service, we'll sing some songs, we'll get you feeling really emotional, and then just tell you how much God loves you, and then send you on your way and send you home, right? Mm-hmm. And there's not necessarily anything wrong with working that out, but if that's the only thing your faith is based on is how you feel in the room,
yes,
then you're not really able to stand up to some of the arguments and the hardships that the world's gonna put up against that.
Yeah, fluff is not enough.
Right, and so it's really important that while this may not be the exact topic that you're really stoked about, it is an important topic because it's going to develop your ability to really reach someone who maybe doesn't want just to be told, well, if you come here, you're going to feel really good about yourself. And it's like, yeah, that doesn't always, that's not the best evangelical tool for everybody,
but
right?
Sometimes you got to do the hard work, right? The mental work and lay the good foundation in order to feel good about yourself, right?
Absolutely. So I think that's really important that we are, even if this isn't your cup of tea, put some energy into it because it may be something that changes somebody's mind down
Jesse's
the road.
Jesse's laying down the challenge. Absolutely. Right there. Go get them, Tiger.
So we are in our process of working through these different proofs. We're on week 4, proof number 4. Are we studying something fun this time?
Well, that depends. Do you think math is fun?
No.
Is math important?
Math is important. I don't think that most people. I think your oldest son finds math amazingly fun.
He loves it.
In our workouts in the morning, he talks about math a lot. And so,
oh, you poor thing.
But I do see the importance of math, and I am weirdly good at math for not enjoying the process of it. Yeah. So,
well, you know, it's just so funny. I always say when I think of my oldest son, I always think of the movie The Matrix. You remember he's in The Matrix, and he's always trying to figure out what's going on. Neo is trying to figure out, and he's supposed to know that it's just a illusion, a computer generated illusion. And but he, what I think is so funny about it, it's not till the very end of the movie where he doesn't see the computer generated illusion anymore as real people, real things. He sees them all as numbers and symbols. And I'm like, I think that's how Zach sees the world.
That's how Zach views it.
He sees it as numbers and symbols because, I mean, anyway, I always get a kick out of that. But
well, he will be excited about the math portion of this, but I assume that we can also find some value in it. So talk to us a little bit about why math is a proof of God, because that
seems
like...
Well, it's called the applicability of mathematics. You know, for thousands of years, the books that make up the Bible, you know, it's a library. Bible means library. Have made all kinds of very simple statements about the nature of God, which we have explored through these proofs, the various books in various different stages of the Bible will say different things, but my favorite is in Colossians chapter 1, and we've read it a couple weeks ago, but basically in verse 16, Paul writes something really quite fascinating. He says, "For in Jesus all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. He is the head of the body of the church. He is the beginning and the firstborn from among the dead, so that in everything he might have the supremacy. For God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross." Now notice these statements. As we've been studying these proofs, right, you start to see in, well, as my youngest son would say, these statements start to hit differently.
Okay.
Right? They hit you differently because it's like, oh, I'm starting to think about things in ways I've never thought about things before, particularly the universe and the creation of the universe and how it fits together. And now I'm listening to these words written 2,000 years ago, and they hit differently. For instance, the phrase, "In him all things were created." You know, one of the arguments that prove the existence of God, it revolves around the notion of existence, okay? And the basic point of this argument, we haven't gone over it because it's kind of like a sub-argument of the cosmological argument, which was number 2. And that is this, is that, you know, in him all things were created. And the sub-argument of existence is this. It states that in order for there to be a universe or anything else to exist, you know, there needs to be a pre-existent nature that exists in order for everything that exists now to exist.
There had to be something before what we have now.
Yeah, like that holds it up, I guess. Right. Like hands that hold it up, so to speak. And it's a pre-existent, uncaused cause nature.
Okay.
Which You know, now this is a more ancient argument, but it's really quite novel. I like it a lot, but I'm not going to dig into it that much. But it basically says, in him all things were created, and everything exists in him. So if we take God away, then nothing can exist.
Okay.
And a lot of people make this argument. You know, it's a very important one. Listen to what he says. All things have been created through him and for him. Here's a direct reference to the cosmological argument, because it states that in order for there to be a universe, there must be an uncaused cause. And so everything was created through him, right? And it was created for him. So the uncaused cause has to exist in order for a cause and effect universe to exist. The statement, he is before all things, and in him all things hold together. This is really an interesting one. We haven't dug into it that much, and I don't think we're going to have time to do it. But this is the argument of for the existence of God that surrounds the argument or the laws of physics called entropy. And that is the notion that all things are heading towards disorder or chaos. You see, all things fall apart unless there's energy being injected into it that holds it together.
Right.
And if you're familiar with your cosmology, which I know all the Salty Pastor listeners are.
They're deep cosmology fans.
They're huge in these areas. Is that the universe is expanding in one direction, right?
Right.
And the universe is cooling. So what do all cosmologists say is happening in the universe? It is running out of energy.
Right.
Which is really interesting, because when you think about Einstein's theory of relativity, energy never ends. It just changes form.
Right.
But when you are working with these other things, that's what's so interesting about it, is that it's actually it's running out of energy. It's cooling. So my question is well, where is it going?
Right.
They don't know. This is where a lot of the issues of dark matter and antimatter and all these kinds of theories come. So they're trying to figure out, well, where is this going?
Right.
You know, what is it? But anyway, notice how he says, what is counteracting that which exists in the universe right now? And what is holding atoms together? What is holding everything together? Well, it says he is before all things, and in him all things hold together. So I think that these are really fascinating statements in light of what we know today in modern cosmology and astrophysics and in quantum mechanics. It's just incredible to see how these things are starting to align. It's so exciting. I want more exploration, more discovery, because I can't wait to see how it turns out. One of the most specific things, though, we see in all of the passages that talk about God and his nature is that God is always a God of order, right? In 1 Corinthians chapter 14, verse 32, he says, the spirit of prophets are subject to the control of the prophets, for God is not a God of disorder, but a God of peace, as in all the congregations of the Lord's people. Now, he's making an argument about, look, when we worship, it shouldn't be chaos. It shouldn't be disorder. That doesn't bring honor to God, because God is not a God of disorder. He is a God of order. So he's talking about worship, and what he's saying is that the nature of God should be present in your worship, okay? Well, what's fascinating is, so what is the nature of God? God of order. And so if we go back to when you look at order, what is order in our universe? It's mathematics. It's all mathematical equations. Everything that's happened and is happening in our universe right now can be represented by an abstract phenomena called mathematics. Isn't that interesting?
Mm.
It's the math that represents what's actually happening, and this is called the applicability of mathematics. I want to go back and remind you of the cosmological proof of God's existence. Okay, we live in a cause-effect universe, right? In order for that to occur, there must be a first cause, which is uncaused, right? Otherwise, it couldn't start. And here's something that's so interesting about this argument, is that math equations cause nothing. A math equation causes nothing. They are 100% abstract, technically, in a material universe, math doesn't exist, right? However, there's so in essence, you have to say there's no physical math manifestation of mathematics, the discipline. But the entire universe runs according to mathematical principles. So this is where it gets, you got to think about this a little bit. Say, okay, what does this look like? Well, Galileo said this, the book of nature is written in the language of mathematics. Dr. Davies, he's a physicist from Arizona State University. He said this, scientists do not use mathematics merely as a convenient way of organizing the data. They believe that mathematical relationships reflect real aspects of the physical world. All science relies on the assumption, this is what's so important, all science relies on the assumption that we live in an ordered universe that is subject to precise mathematical laws. Thus, all the laws of physics are expressed as mathematical equations. And if you go back and you look at some of the great mathematicians like Pythagoras, you know, he was the one who told us all about how to figure out a triangle, right? The Pythagoras theorem.
Pythagorean theorem.
Yeah. And so, but you know what else he discovered? He discovered that if you take a vibrating string and you cut it in half, guess what? It plays the exact same note an octave higher.
Mm.
Isn't that interesting? Isaac Newton, he used math to describe the nature of gravity, and that mathematical equation that Isaac came up with is what allowed us to enter into space. Isaac Newton launched the space age because of his mathematical equation. What does his mathematical equation do? It represents gravity, and because it was so accurate and he figured it out, that equation allowed us to figure out all the other math, you know, to represent all the things that had to happen to launch a person into space and bring them back home. Here's another thing that's really interesting. Radio waves. No one ever knew that a radio wave existed. Nobody ever saw one. No one ever heard one. So how did we discover it? How do you discover something that no one knows exists? We did it through math. Right? The guy who discovered radio waves was doing math, and he said, well, the math says these things should exist.
Mm.
And, of course, one of my favorite is the Higgs boson. I don't know if you ever heard of the Higgs boson, but the Higgs boson is a particle so small, it's smaller than quarks, it's smaller than neutrons and electrons and protons. It's the things that make up atoms. It's smaller than that. And the reason they want to find the Higgs boson is because they are trying to figure out where gravity comes from. It's so interesting that we know so much about gravity, like Newton says, but we have no idea why there's gravity.
Right.
So we know everything about it, but we don't know why, which is, I just can't wait till we discover that. That'll be incredibly fun. Sorry, salty people. I am basically geeking out here right now. But what's so fascinating about this is that when you discover, what they did is they spent billions and billions of dollars. They built these massive particle accelerators, right? And the one in Switzerland, CERN, they finally were able to test in the math. And he was a physicist by the name of Higgs. You always get to name stuff after yourself. But basically what he figured out, he said, well, in order for mass to be in something, to create gravity, this particle has to exist. And no one could ever find it. Well, they finally found it. Billions of dollars later, decades and decades later, they discovered, oh, it does exist. So how did they find something? How could they even learn to build something, to test for something that no one knew existed, has ever seen, or could ever measure? It's never been measured before. Math. The math said it had to exist. So do you see how this is working? Is math is showing us where to go next in a lot of ways, even though technically math doesn't really
exist
in the real world.
Right.
But it represents the nature of the world in which we live. That's a mind bender right there.
Yeah, I think what's interesting is, based on all the things you're saying, it's basically, it's our adventure map or our treasure map to things, right? It says, if you follow this, you'll find something, right? Because it's putting into, you know, whatever concept you want to call math, something that the world is structured around that needs to be represented in some form. And we say that's through math, right?
Yes.
But it just further shows that the world is ordered, right? Which is interesting because if you listen to how we were supposedly evolved and created and whatever, based on what atheists and scientists say, and I'm assuming you're going to talk about this, is all this should just be a cosmic accident that just like happened and fell into place. But all we're seeing more and more as we study these proofs is it was intentional. It's ordered.
Exactly.
It's designed. There's not chaos in it. There's, in fact, really fine-tuned, like this last week, fine-tuned refinement in exactly how it's done. And so I'm assuming math just points more towards how perfect and intentional the world was created, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
So, I mean, let's talk about that, because if I'm guessing, because obviously if you brought it up, it's a proof. So we already kind of know that math is a proof of God, but I want you to walk us through why it's a proof of God.
And now, whether you like math or not is not the question. And also, the question is not, well, what does the math say? The real question is, why does the universe abide by such powerful mathematical equations?
Okay.
Why is math can represent what's happening? And the math states exact opposite of Darwinian philosophy, which says, well, things will change, over a long period of time based on mutation. Well, the math doesn't say that. It says that, no, things go towards greater, the law of entropy says it goes towards chaos. Math says something is holding it together towards greater order. And so mutations are eliminated, not adapted. Mm. So I think that's a really significant point, especially when you talk about probabilities. So everybody's dealing with this, especially math guys. They're saying, okay, well, there's two basic options of how math – it was either accidental, right, or it was on purpose. Now, anybody who's a naturalist, an atheist, or scientific materialist is going to say, well, it couldn't have happened on purpose. It had to be an accident, okay? But in 1960, Nobel Prize-winning physicist and mathematician Eugene Wigner published an article titled "The Unreasonable Effectiveness of Mathematics on the Natural Sciences." And he basically said this in his article, that the effectiveness of mathematics is a miracle which we neither understand nor deserve. So the fourth proof, revolving around the applicability of math, goes like this. Premise one, if God does not exist, then the applicability of mathematics is just a coincidence. Of course, this is what naturalists and scientific materialists want. They want to state that the universe is mathematical simply because it just happened to work out that way. The second premise is this. The applicability of math is not a coincidence. There's no way, shape, or form that it could be coincidence. The math says it can't be coincidence. All theists state that the only way that mathematics can be so applicable is because it's a miracle, just like Eugene Wigner said, right? And that is that, therefore, like an architect, okay, designed it this way on purpose first. That's the only way that it could be like this. Therefore, God exists. Now, this main argument uses the second premise, and that is that math can't be coincidental. Because now the naturalist will say, well, yes, it can be coincidental. And then the theist will respond, well, it can't be coincidental because math can create things that the physical universe cannot manifest.
If you can't see my face, listeners, I'm very confused that statement. So I'm going to have Pastor Doug explain that a little bit further. You guys all probably have the same look as I did on my face. So just take what you look like and imagine that's what my face looks like.
Yeah, stun the confusion. Okay. A naturalist says the only thing that exists is this natural universe, what's in it.
Right.
Okay. And it just so happens that it's governed by mathematical principles because it's coincidental.
Right.
All right? So we haven't discovered everything yet in this physical universe, but we will. We're using math to discover what that might be. Okay? However, there's only one problem with that. I want to make sure I wrote this down because I want to make sure that is that math can't be a coincidence because math can actually create things that the physical universe cannot manifest.
I still don't quite get it. So, okay. Can you give me some examples? Like, what do you mean by that statement?
Well, for instance, mathematically, there's things called imaginary numbers.
Right.
Math, a lot of math is based on the concept of infinity, but infinity cannot exist.
Right.
Technically, in the universe that we're in, can infinity exist? You know that there was a Big Bang that started, and there is an edge to space and time, right?
Right.
So can infinity exist within a physical realm?
No.
No, it can't. So, but you're saying that math exists only because the physical realm exists. But the math that we use all the time uses infinity to figure out new things. So that is a paradox. That is a contradiction.
Right.
It's irrational. And that's the point, is that math is creating things that exist outside of the limited universe. And so that's what's so amazing about it. So the greatest mathematicians are using math to discover things and create things that exist outside of the known universe. So how can you say, well, math only exists because of the known universe? Do you see the logical contradiction there?
Yes.
I'm not saying you can see it, but you may not understand it.
Yes, okay. I see it. I don't know that I fully understand it, but I think I'm tracking with you.
Well, let's break it down and let's be reductionist. Have you ever heard of the argument, which comes first, the chicken or the egg conundrum?
Yes.
Okay, you've heard of that, right?
Yes.
Well, guess what? Which came first, mathematics or the universe? Well, if math can discover things that the universe cannot manifest, then math came first. There's no way you can argue that math came after the universe started. And there is the conundrum. Math preexisted the creation of the universe in an abstract form, okay? So, therefore, if math preexisted, then there had to be someone who knew math.
Okay.
Otherwise, math could not be manifested in the physical realm because math came before the creation of the universe.
So let me see if I'm somewhat getting this just for my sake and the listeners. You're basically saying the world being so adherent to the rules of math, so how you even build a building as far as like exact dimensions of a triangle that allow things to be stable, stuff like that. Math had to come first and basically exist before the world. Otherwise, those things wouldn't adhere to it. It wouldn't have been like, oh, a triangle exists. I guess I'll create a mathematical equation around that, right? Am I getting there?
Yeah, like, you're getting
basically
it.
Basically, it's like, so if the world had existed before and then said, oh, you know, I'm a stable structure, I think I'm going to invent a math thing to show that, that doesn't make sense. But if math is the governing basis of our world, and we're just discovering how to use it better, and the world is adhering to it automatically, then we're just catching up to what is already been existent beforehand. Am I wrapping that up?
Yeah, we don't create math. We, you know what I'm saying? We discover it.
We're discovering it.
Yeah, we're
more
discovering
and more.
And
it's leading us on this fun adventure of finding all these different things that, based on the math, say, this should be here. Oh, we went and found it, right? Like it's leading us because the world is a slave, quote unquote, to the math.
Yes.
It's not influencing the math. It's not creating the math as it's going. It pre-exists.
Correct.
We're just discovering it.
Yeah, see, theists postulate that the reason mathematics are so central to the universe is because, let me rephrase it. Theists, not atheists, but theists say this. The reason why mathematics are so central to the universe, that the universe is a slave to mathematical principles, and that allows any scientists to go find new things is because they're just following the math like a map, right? Which is a great way to say it, is because God had a pre-existent plan and then built the universe according to that plan. Like an architect who sits down and says, let's design a city. And the one thing about the city is, in order for a city to operate and be successful, a lot of people don't realize this, is that you got to have all this infrastructure. You have to have really great power distribution. You have to have water distribution, and you have to have sewer. The probably the thing that saved humanity more than anything else is a plumber.
Right.
Right? Because disease comes out of waste.
Lack of planning for the waste.
Lack of planning and dealing with that. So an architect sits down and says, okay, I know all of these things that have to happen for a city to flourish. And then I also want it to be beautiful, and I want it to be attractive, and I want it to be enhancing human flourishment. Right. Well, what enhances the flourishing of humanity? Well, you got to understand human beings. You got to understand what makes them tick. You got to understand what they really need, not what they say they want, but what they really need. So you have to have an immense amount of information for an architect to sit down and plan a city. And yet architects do that, and then they start to build the city according to what? The plan,
right?
The drawings. The drawings are just abstract lines on a paper. They don't really mean anything, but if you follow them, what do you end up with? A beautiful, functional city. And so what math is it's the pre-existent plan. And so that's why I love this proof. It says that God is the best explanation for the applicability of math. In other words, God is the best explanation as to why math always works.
Yeah, I mean, I think you are, I think I'm getting a better thing, and I'm excited on Thursday because I think I'm going to use, I have another way of potentially helping us understand this abstract concept.
Good, I can't wait
to
hear it.
So everyone's going to have to tune in for that, but I was initially hesitant, but I'm now a little more excited about this topic. So I think you're getting us interested a little bit more and more about, oh, well, how did this work? So thank you so much for sharing this with us. Some of us are coming along kicking and screaming. Some of us are really excited about it, like your son.
Yes.
And it's going to be really great. But I think it's so important that we do work out those brain muscles, that we have a reason for why we can defend our faith and we're not the irrational ones. I think that's what you've been mostly trying to share with us this entire time, is you are not irrational for having faith. You are actually more rational than everyone else. And that's super important. So I hope you guys are tuning in on Thursday. We're going to be talking more about this, the applicability of, that's a mouthful, applicability of mathematics and why God exists. Thank you guys for joining us, and we'll see you on Thursday.
Keep thinking for yourself. Thank you.